Hello, I'm Eleanor Olin. I'm a music historian, author, and opera educator, and I'm very pleased to introduce Gaetano Donizetti's charming comic opera, L'Elisir d'Amore. Many of us know L'Elisir d'Amore, the love potion, via the aria Una furtiva lagrima, which is beloved by audiences and feared by operatic tenors, at least since Enrico Caruso stole the show with it at La Scala in 1901 and made it his calling card for the rest of his career. But there's more to Donizetti's love potion, much more, as we shall soon hear. Exquisite arias, comic patter songs, and rousing ensembles have all contributed to its enduring success. It was the most frequently performed opera anywhere in the decade and a half following its premiere, and has continuously been in the operatic repertoire, delighting audiences since its first staging in 1832. Gaetano Donizetti was born in Bergamo in northern Italy to very humble circumstances on November 29, 1797. He described his family's poverty in a letter written toward the end of his life. "I was born underground in Borgo Canale," wrote Donizetti. "You went down cellar steps where no glimmer of light ever penetrated. And like an owl, I took flight, never encouraged by my poor father, who was always telling me, 'It is impossible that you will ever compose music.'" But Bergamo in those days was famous for several things: numerous successful operatic tenors who came from the area, and an influential music teacher, Simone Meyer, who became a lifelong mentor and champion of Donizetti's career. Donizetti's debut as a professional composer came just a few weeks before his 20th birthday. His opera, Enrico di Borgogna, was staged at the Teatro San Luca in Venice in November of 1818. It was an inauspicious beginning. Critics commented on the warfare between the orchestra and singers, but acknowledged that there might have been a warmer reception for the work had the inexperienced prima donna not fainted on stage from performance anxiety and need to be replaced before the end of Act One. In a few short years, however, the same critics were applauding young Donizetti as a new hope for Italian opera. What was the state of Italian opera at the beginning of the 19th century, whether or not it was in need of such a boost? In 1832, the year L'Elisir d'Amore first saw the stage, three composers were the faces of Italian opera. Let's call them the bel canto triumvirate: Donizetti, Rossini, and Bellini. The elder statesman was Gioachino Rossini, whose final opera, Guillaume Tell, or William Tell, the overture of which became the Lone Ranger theme, had been written just 3 years earlier. Vincenzo Bellini, whom the musical press had nominated as Donizetti's only rival on the operatic stage, had just written his tragic opera Norma in 1831. Bel canto, the style of singing characteristic in the works of these composers, emphasizes smooth legato melodies sung with an even tone quality throughout a singer's vocal range, highlighting technical, often virtuosic, agility and control for optimal dramatic expressiveness. A review of soprano Eugenia Tarolini's performance in L'Elisir d'Amore, she was one of Donizetti's favorite singers, gives us an idea of bel canto singing at its best. "The beauty of this voice, perfectly balanced in strength and volume, can be imagined as a perfectly constructed cone, which presents no unevenness, no slight imperfection from the bass to the vertex. This voice features an extraordinary precision and purity in the execution of scales, both ascending and descending, as well as an astonishing confidence in facing leaps between the most remote notes, so that with extreme ease and without the hint of an error, It passes between any sound within its 2.5-octave range. In the decades following the immediate triumph of La Lisière d'Amore, Donizetti's operas were performed more often than those of any other composer in the 100-plus opera houses of Italy. His works were successfully produced in Paris, London, and in the U.S. Here in Chicago, where distiller Uranus H. Crosby founded and built the city's first opera house in 1865, a highlight of the first fall season was none other than Donizetti's Le Lisière d'Amore. Crosby's opera house was a theater of 3,000 seats at the corner of Washington and Dearborn Streets that unfortunately burned down in the Great Chicago Fire. An interesting side note, Wagner's Tristan and Isolde, which also features the theme of a love potion, was premiered that very same year in Munich. Our production has been brought closer to the present from the setting of Donizetti's early 19th century story. As the opera begins, we are virtual guests at a hotel on the Amalfi Coast in the 1950s. It is La Dolce Vita, and the workers are taking a break. One of the waiters, Nemorino, the tenor, is watching the object of his unrequited love, Adina. The soprano, who is the well-to-do owner of the hotel. Nemorino, a lovable innocent, laments that he can only stand apart and stare, wondering how it would ever be possible to win Adina's heart. Adina, meanwhile, is reading skeptically about the beautiful Isotta, whose magic potion captured the heart of her soulmate Tristan. Enter the dashing naval officer Belcore, the baritone, with his men. Belcore offers flowers to Adina, bragging that beautiful women can't help but surrender to his charms, and that she has only to choose the day when they will be married. This is a comic opera, after all, and there's no reason to hold to a realistic timeline. Nemorino is despondent and asks Adina for just a moment to talk. She brushes him off, telling him to go visit his elderly uncle. Nemorino, however, is so lovesick that he declares he really couldn't care less, and his rich uncle could just as well leave his fortune to another heir. A trumpet call announces the arrival of Dulcamara, the bass, in a hot air balloon. Dulcamara declares himself to be the greatest of all doctors, whose powerful remedies can cure anything and everything, from the asthmatical, hysterical, or bronchiotidical, to the paralytical, rheumatical, and scorbutical, you get the idea. Nemorino is entranced. Getting things a little turned around, he asks, does the good doctor sell Tristan's potion, the one that captured Queen Isolde's passion? Dulcamara does indeed sell this very potion, and for just the sum that Nemorino's paltry financial means can afford. The only caution, the magic elixir, actually a bottle of cheap Beaujolais, will not work for another 24 hours, by which time Dr. Dulcamara figures he can be safely away to entice any sufferers in the next village down the road. Nemorino's newly found Dutch courage surprises Adina, who decides that she will make plans to marry Belcore, if only to make Nemorino jealous, and the wedding should take place that very evening. Things quickly get complicated. Belcore receives orders that he and his men are called to action the next day. Adina can't believe her adoring Nemorino isn't upset by the accelerated wedding plans. Nemorino's newfound confidence and hopes are dashed, all while the villagers rejoice at the general prospect of drinking, dancing, and carousing. In the second act, Nemorino asks Dulcamara for another dose of the magic elixir, but has no money for the purchase. Belcore entices the lovelorn Nemorino to enlist in the Navy for the signing bonus of 20 scudi, by coincidence, exactly Dulcamara's price. Directly after affixing his X on the conscription papers, young women surround Nemorino adoringly. It isn't the miraculous potion, but rather the news, unbeknownst to Nemorino, that his rich uncle has just died. Seeing Adina's misty eyes, Nemorino begins to imagine that she just might love him. After purchasing back his enlistment papers, Adina finally declares her love for Nemorino. Dulcamara tells the assemblage of villagers about the news of Nemorino's inheritance. He takes all the credit, reasserting the wonders of his science that can make people fall in love and even turn a poor country lad into a millionaire. Everyone, with the exception of the jilted Belcore, happily applauds the good doctor as he rides off. Donizetti's L'Elisir d'Amore was composed very quickly, adapted from the libretto of a French opera, Le Philtre, The Love Potion, written by Daniel François Esprit Aubert, staged in Paris the previous year. While the often repeated story that Donizetti composed L'Elisir d'Amore in 2 weeks is probably not true, the opera was completed at nearly the speed of light, from sketch to production in less than 2 months, which is difficult to imagine given the necessary details of composing, rehearsing, and staging a work in any era. Some of Donizetti's expediency was aided by the recycling of pieces from earlier works, a common practice among composers of the day. One of the chorus numbers in this opera, for example, was repurposed for Dulcamara's entrance from an earlier serious opera, Il Castello di Kenilworth. Donizetti and his librettist Felice Romani revised the story from Aubert's Le Filtre, balancing comic tropes and vocal brilliance with a very human tenderness in the sincerity of their characterizations, each of which has its own musical identity. We meet Nemorino straight away. His music communicates both his naivete and his deeply honest nature. Introduced by swaying rhythms in the strings and a romantic flute melody, Nemorino sings a folk song-like tune. "How beautiful she is," he sighs. "How can I ever hope to win her love?" Adina's music is more sophisticated, although if we listen carefully, we notice that just like Nemorino's introductory aria, it is in triple time. Throughout the opera, both characters are identified with triple meter, individually and in their duets together. Adina's entrance aria is a waltz, a musical genre which 19th century audiences associated not with champagne-energized ballroom revelry, but with seduction and physical attraction. Adina sings wistfully about Isotta, whom we know as Isolde, whose magic potion captured her lover Tristan, heart and soul. If we listen carefully to how the orchestra's voice intertwines with Adina's melody, we hear how she aspires to experience epic romance. As our new music director, Maestro Enrique Mazzola, has said, The orchestral participation in the dramaturgical game of the opera is absolutely fundamental. So it's not just the singer alone. It's actually the orchestra which is able to send to the audience the feeling of what is going on. Conveniently, Dr. Dulcamara appears on the scene, a classic snake oil salesman full of bluster and nearly convincing bravado. He is the quintessential comic bass. Although he's a caricature, he's a type very familiar to 19th century listeners as well as to us today. His name is the botanical for bittersweet, the heart-shaped leaves of which were once believed to have erotic benefits. In his declamatory opening spiel, Dulcamara boasts that his miraculous cures for everything from a toothache to achieving a happy marriage are renowned throughout the universe and in other places. There is a sly reference to Italian politics of the day in Dulcamara's comment that he has a special price just for those who are born in this country. Io sono nato nel paese. Italy in 1832 was not yet a unified self-governing nation and was largely under the occupation of either France, Austria, or Spain. Just the previous year, one of a series of rebellions had taken place in central Italy, coalescing nationalists in the region. Here is an excerpt from Dulcamara's entrance aria to a rally of sorts, assembling the villagers.
Udite, udite, rustici. Attenti, non fiate. Io già suppongo e immagino chi al par di me sappiate ch'io sono quel gran medico, dottore enciclopedico, chiamato Dulcamara, la cui virtù preclara e portarti infiniti son noti all'universo e in altri siti.
Nimorino is tapped out after purchasing Dr. Dulcamara's marvelous elixir, obliging him to enlist with Belcore's squadron. Belcore's character would also have been familiar to audiences of 19th century Italy. Soldiers came to a village and were billeted with the assumption that the locals would entertain them. In this next duet between Nemorino and Belcore, we hear Donizetti's exquisite musical characterization. Nemorino's soaring melody is full of heartfelt pathos, while Belcore's buffa pattersong conveys his chest-thumping bluster, touting the adventurous life, including references to an active love life led by a military man.
Oh. muro al son di pace, con le file e le bandiere, a girarsi amor si piace, con le piste di bandiere, con le piste di bandiere.
Chi un giorno tiene a via.
Sempre lieto, sempre gaio, ha di pelle un centinaio, di costanza non s'annoia, non si perde a sospirare, non si perde a sospirare. Vendi a me la vera gioia, vendi a me la vera gioia, accompagna militare, accompagna militare. Vendi a me la vera gioia, accompagna militare, vendi a me la vera gioia, accompagna militare. Vendi a me la vera gioia, accompagna militare. Vendi a me la vera gioia, accompagna militare.
We are given a sneak preview of the happy ending, of course, with Nemorino's signature romanza, Una furtiva lagrima. Several insider clues as you listen. The harp introducing Nemorino's melody is meant to suggest the strumming guitar of a romantic serenade. Our hero is becoming more confident, but we are reminded of his humble station by the pastoral sounds of the woodwinds, especially the beautiful bassoon solo that previews the melody. A closer look at the lyrics of this famous aria tells us whose furtive tear is the subject at hand. Nemorino is watching Adina, whose jealousy has been aroused by all the village girls flocking around him. Mamma, he sings. That's M apostrophe A, not mama, but Italian for she loves me. Now she is more beautiful than ever. There are, of course, a few more hurdles to overcome before everything is happily ever after, but all is well in the end. Dulcamara, waving goodbye, warns all those assembled not to let any charlatan swindle them. His is the only cure for unhappiness. Everyone, not least Nemorino and Adina, cheer for him and wish him well. The full orchestra, complete with cymbals and drums, joins the vocal ensemble in the good doctor's send-off.
Thank you.
wishing you all a good farewell, I'll paraphrase the words of legendary soprano Teresa Stratus, who believed deeply that opera is something we all need, no matter what language we speak, no matter our background or walk of life. "Opera is about human emotions," she wrote. "If you just listen to the feeling, you'll understand." Especially in times of difficulty, we can listen and hear Donizetti's overriding message in this opera. Let us find love and appreciation in one another, because it is there to find.